Welcome back everyone to the podcast. After some considerable technical difficulties, my guests today are Jan Chessul, aka Slot. I like calling him Slot, so hello and welcome back from sunny Costa Rica.
Hi Shonko, nice to thanks too for having
me. I mean, you're still there, but it is sunny and you're from there and you are welcome back on the podcast. I want that to be clear because it's very vital information to the podcast.
Thank you.
Also, Hannes Bredberg. Hey, Hannes.
Hey, I'm happy to be back.
From not so sunny Stockholm and my partner in crime with the Bladder Project. And the third guest today is Ankh. Also, welcome back from somewhere in the USA, I presume. Hi.
Yeah, hi. Nice to be here.
And the first topic is, as usual, just asking you what you were up to during the last few days, weeks, or months. Let's start with Ankh. What did you do since you were last in the podcast?
Oh, not really much. I've been mostly scripting with Godot script. For another game. It's mostly just because it's a little simple project that I've been helping out with.
And investigating BW API and just Brood War inner workings, I presume. I mean,
I did a couple of those.
You always give the best technical answers when someone asks about the Brood War inner workings.
Yeah, actually, there's a couple more that I want to answer because Crazio had started a conversation. I was going to look up because they were talking about special case. There's things that was oftentimes work, but not for the reason you think they do. I seem to recall his question being one of those.
I like that even people who kind of know the Brood War code has a lot of misconceptions about it.
Yeah, there's no shortage of that. It's... Everybody thinks they understand how the game works, but it's just so much more complicated.
Yes, yeah, so Hannes, what you were up to? And I kind of know the answer to that question, but the listeners don't, so please go ahead.
So, yeah, first of all, of course I've been working, but I guess since the last cast, I think right after the cast is when we started making the... Bladder launcher, and then we did stuff like we actually ran some real games in the cloud, so been working a lot on Bladder basically in my free time, and that's basically what I've done in my free time, like with interesting stuff.
Yeah, and the project is coming along nicely, if a little bit slowly. I published a Trello board with open tasks, more like concepts at this point, but if you want to take a look, I will include that in the podcast link. With that being said, let's ask Slot what you were up to lately.
Well, I've been prototyping a system for me to run the Java bots and the C++ bots. I have been had a grateful help from Dan, who has been advising me in the certain types of the architecture that we share. And for now, I have a custom environment which I could install Wine on, and I have the 32-byte version of Java already set up, and I've been testing to run the purple wave on in the C++, you know, in the Java side of things. For C++, I decide to go with Banana Brain since we shared the first episode that I appear here on the podcast. So I go with Banana Brain.
Speaking of Banana Brain, the bot has received quite a lot of updates lately, and from what I've seen on Basil, it's climbing the ladder steadily. Did you watch any games of it and maybe have some insight what's the new deal with Banana Brain?
No, to be honest with you, I noticed that he has been updating and updating like new versions and working a lot on his bot and updating on Basil. But what I did was like put a version that I choose like days ago, so I don't have like a play or like I don't have like the chance to see like the new tricks that, and the good work that I know for sure that he has been pushing into his bot, so I can comment about that.
And with happenings and goings on, BW API 5 is also moving along steadily. Hannes, you are part of that project, so would you mind saying a few words about its state and what's done, what not is done, and such things?
Well, I haven't worked like very closely with it lately. I've mostly worked on the interface, not that much on the network stuff. That is what BW API 5 update is. But from what I've heard, it's basically that there's some kind of data structure that pretty much just needs to be put into protobuf over a working connection now. So I think most of the stuff is done except the network.
That's great to hear, and we hope that we can see it done soon. Kind of the big thing the community waits to be announced. Another news is, it's a pretty big one and quite unfortunate at that, is you might be aware that the SSEIT Twitch channel got hacked by someone. We don't really know what happened, but as of now it is down. And yeah, we don't know when it will get back. And yeah, that's the sad state of affairs. But that begs the question that what do you think, what kind of backup channels should we have for not just that, but in general? I think we don't have enough channels, or we should have more channels to promote SSEIT content. I mean, I still, when I talk about this scene to people, they are honestly surprised that such thing exists. So yeah, the question is a little bit vague, but what are your thoughts on that?
I don't know. I really like having at least one channel. I don't know if there's enough content. I mean, unless you're running multiple games at the same time, to have more than one channel, because otherwise you're just spamming Twitch with lots of bots fighting. Not that it's a bad thing, but I just feel like there should be something different between the channels, like different tournament groups, like have the top bots versus the top bots, and then the bottom bots versus the bottom bots, and separate them by channel like that.
Yeah, not necessarily bot versus bot matches, because it is quite hard to filter those for good games. Finding good replays is work in itself. It takes time.
I really don't know if there is like alternatives to Twitch for that kind of stream, but maybe have like a backup account for just in case after all these issues that we are having. I don't know, maybe it could be useful, because to be honest, I don't know if there is like strong alternatives for these sort of things. Maybe, I don't know if you can like stream directly on YouTube, maybe you can. And to be honest with you, I don't know how much is like the online viewers of the streams in comparison of the views that can be later, like in the YouTube, so on the other sort of platforms for video streaming.
Well, SSEIT does stream to Smashcast too, and it did stream to YouTube, but it wasn't allowed to continue doing so because of the amount of videos it generated. YouTube wasn't happy about it, So SSEIT wasn't allowed to stream on YouTube anymore. But there is a Smashcast stream running at the moment, I believe.
Maybe in YouTube then only stream like the weekly streams and don't spam like the 24 content of video. I don't know.
Yeah, that's how it worked. But Smashcast was, I feel, wasn't very great. It for a lot of people it had problems.
It was painful. I can use that. Not here in Costa Rica. I don't know how it's like in the. Wherever you guys from, but it was painful. I can join.
It literally didn't work for me.
I've never checked it. Twitch always worked for me.
Yeah, so back to the question at hand, the content. I think what we have, and it is great, the some human versus bot matches, and I quite enjoy Jealousy streams about those. Especially because we saw more of the bot side and we know what to expect and he does not. And it is so funny to watch sometimes. But content like this, where you get some kind of human touch, but still you are in the bot side of things.
Yeah, maybe what's needed is making playing versus bots more accessible so that more people can do it. Wouldn't a service like that be great?
If only there were a project that aimed to do that. Have you heard any project such as those?
No, I haven't.
I hear one called Bladder that is coming. I don't know, guys, if you guys, but it's that... making some really noise and it's making... good promise.
Doesn't really sound trustworthy to me.
That sounds like triple gay.
They might have a running prototype or not.
User-generated content. Someone even suggested that we should stream coding of bots, which I think is a hilariously bad idea. I think the person who suggested it was McRae, but I'm not sure, and McRae, I'm sorry if it wasn't you.
I don't think it could be streamed, but maybe it could be done in a video on demand kind of style where like you can develop for like 12 hours and condense it into maybe 20 entertaining minutes to watch.
Do you think maybe a pair programming type of thing could be interesting or entertaining when two guys just trying to figure out shit about Brood War?
I'm not sure. Maybe that's an idea and a half.
I mean, people do stream coding sessions on Twitch and people do watch those, so it's not entirely out of question. And in general, I feel coding is seen as some kind of very abstract and unapproachable thing when it is really not. You only need a computer and maybe internet for it.
Why don't you try and see what happens?
Mostly because I don't have the time for it, but yeah, it may be in the future.
Yeah, you can even go through the guide or the content that you are already building. The jumpy bot.
Yeah, I don't know. My development process might not be streamable for the average human, but I can set it up. Let's think about this. And more kind of content and more content in general would be nice. And not just video, but any kind of. So I encourage everyone to share your doings with the world. Okay, next topic is StarCraft in general. I think we talked about how we played StarCraft, and none of us are pro players or even active players anymore. Is that right, or does any of you play at least semi-regularly StarCraft?
No, not really.
Well, I play a lot of StarCraft, yes.
Oh, then I was wrong about that. did you have any kind of inspiration from the pro scene or something like that? Especially, did you take experience from players, pro players, or prominent people in StarCraft scenes for creating your bots, or just having motivation for creating bots?
Well, at the first beginning of my project, to be honest with you, all that I want was a bot that played like Yellow, because that was like related to my time playing semi-professional here in Costa Rica. That was like a goal of the past. Right now, I don't have like this a grandiose statement in which I want my bot to play like certain players, but I think there is important to know about the human meta or the game meta in order to build a bot. And I play as a Zerg, so my bot is Zerg as well, and the thing that I most like about Zerg in general is that is the only race that is kind of the responder. The Terrans and Protoss are the ones that have or mark the initiative, but Zerg is the more adaptive one, is the one that need to adapt. And I feel that you can like use that characteristic or particular or property in your advantage in the like doing research on AI like that. I follow or I trying to exploit that adaptation of the race sort of thing.
I don't really play per se. I mostly just watch. I mean, I'll boot up the game to try stuff out, especially for what I bought. If I want to see what it does, I might just have it do something, or I'll play a short match versus a computer to see what happens. But I think I've only played like a dozen matches in the last year or two. Not really any online versus other humans. I think I'd be at about an F or a D skill wise. I'm not really the detailed meta following person for ladders and stuff like that. As far as bot, I also went with Zerg, mostly because I felt that there was some great opportunity for bots to take advantage of the massive unit counts of Zerg and just go crazy on other players, because you could just be everywhere all at once. Especially if you can, once I get additional mineral flow coming from a little advanced rhesus harving, I think I can quickly outnumber every other player and win just through sheer brute force mostly. But I think if I add a little tactics on top of that, it'd be a nice overwhelming pot.
I think we talked about your resource gathering optimizations, and it was quite great. Did you discover anything else in addition? Did you measure how much improvement do you have over the standard mineral gathering rate?
I lost track of my hard data on that. I didn't measure organizational changes. So far, I've just been using the 10% number that I hear from on the was it the post on Team Liquid or something like that on the mineral gathering. But I know that it was a solid average of 8 frames savings if you implement the 0 frame action. Because you're basically skipping a random 2 to 6 frames on wait for the drone on arrival at either the minerals or the resource depot, the hatchery. The the movement trick where you can have a drone to return resources, turn around, and instantly start off with 2/3 of their speed is a little trickier to measure. I don't think I measured it independently because it doesn't actually work reliably without the stop of the zero frame delay, because you need the bells to have a zero frame delay, then have it turn around and move without going to the resource in order to skip the stopping and dumping of the velocity. That way it'll maintain 2/3 roughly, because it'll be slowing down as it approaches, because units try to avoid face planting. But basically you convince it that it was not a face plant, but rather it was a stop and turn in place instead.
So which... a little background, best of my knowledge, that's probably wrong. Flying units and hovering units have this acceleration and deceleration thing, which is when they start to move, they don't immediately move at their full speed, but they need to accelerate. And likewise, when they are stopping, they are not stopping immediately, but rather decelerating at the end of the movement. That is, if you don't stop them in place immediately. Is that correct so far?
Yeah, so there's three types of units. There's the I-script unit type, which has instant acceleration, but their movement speed will depend on whatever the script tells the unit to move that particular frame. It'll cycle one frame at a time through the animation script. The other two are floating and air. Floating will behave very similar to air, which it'll have acceleration. They both have acceleration and deceleration. But there's a little difference about turning styles and such, whereas and I think it's stopping. There's some little small differences in how they will handle sharp turns and the like. And whether you can have them stop in place and then turn around instantly. But most of the time, like when you ask a I-script unit to turn, a U-turn, basically it'll stop in place, turn in place, and then start in the opposite direction. If you ask a floating or air unit to do a sharp turn, it will actually do a U-turn, and it'll keep moving forward with residual speed as it rounds into its new direction.
And that explains some bugs that people use with the Scorch, for example, and the Corsair. That's nice to know.
Yeah, that's part of it.
So the hovering units are workers, archons, and vultures, right? Is there anything else?
Let's see here. So workers, archons, vultures.
Both archons, yeah.
I remember that you mentioned a random delay of about 2 frames or 2 seconds when making a new calling, like the Pathfinder.
Yeah, that's the affects I-script units only. I don't know if it's just intended as a consequence of not having acceleration, but yeah, they have the 0 to 2 frame delay.
Are all units on the game I-script units, or do we have like inconsistencies that are well known?
The categories are distinct. It's not either I-script, floating, or air, and not more than one of those.
Yeah, they're exclusionary types, so it's one of the three. From an in-game perspective, if you notice any inconsistent or sort of jerky movements, like, say, Dragoons, Reavers, I think Goliaths, all have inconsistent movement speeds, but there are some that have consistent movement speeds, but they have instant acceleration, like, say, siege tanks, which have a consistent 4 frame every turn, or 4 movement speed every frame, basically, regardless of the start. I mean, there's no cycle, whereas, like, Dragoons are every other turn you'll have 0 or you'll have 2. Let's see here. I've forgotten.
I see. So we can make things for granted. Not everything is inconsistent.
Accelerating units are very consistent as long as you know the rules of stopped halting distance and turnings, because there's some specific rules about when they'll accelerate or decelerate around turns, and they try to avoid face planting, which basically means that they'll start slowing down to a stop before they reach their destination. The easy way to fix that is have them temporarily think they're going further, and then tell them that they've reached their destination. You can get, if that's an air unit, though, they'll continue floating forwards. That may not be optimal. Sometimes you have to have them turn around. You have to take into account the fact that they'll continue moving forward, basically. There's no hard stop for many of these units. There's 2 movement flags. So normally acceleration is a value of 1 divided by 256. Of movement speed in terms of pixels per frame. So if you had a
pixels per frame, that's a very important stat.
This explains the flying drone, as you are explaining on the Earth, units that can stop for some reasons. Then
drones are crazy in their own.
How about the carrier though? This iScript apply, I guess, for all units and the carrier as well, that is, or have like.
As far as I understand, iScript are only like ground units without acceleration, right?
So specifically, every unit has an iScript, but they only some units will use iScript to determine their movement speeds. So they may have animations and stuff like that happen, but there's a specific command in the script which says you have a movement speed of 2 or 4 or 8 next frame. And so they'll be given that, and then they'll replace their existing movement speed. Although for iScript, I think they zero out their movement speed at the beginning of every frame, and then they get replaced that zero with the next movement speed. Otherwise, the acceleration units maintain their movement speed across, and they add the acceleration in. There's two flags in there. There's a 0, which, I mean, it's pretty straightforward. If its unit's got a 0 speed, it's not going to accelerate at all. It also, I think, affects turning, though, or it may not. I don't know. There was something about that. But 1 movement speed or 1 acceleration is actually a flag for that means that it has an iScript movement pattern, meaning that the actual speed will be determined by the iScript, and it will have 100% acceleration. It'll just do whatever speed is told by the iScript.
Let me take the opportunity to talk about a site which I recommend. It is Hired.com, an online job search platform where you can make a profile, submit it, and employers will come to you with offers. I use them personally, and I can recommend them. They are professional and quick. If you get hired through them, you even get a cash bonus. Registering with my link is a great way to help me, and it costs you nothing. Thank you for checking it out, and now back to the show.
You mentioned a program called ICC, in which you get all these iScript files. Is that available on?
I forgot where I got it, but yeah, you should be able to Google it. It's ICCC. I believe they combined it into one word, but it's ICECC. And from there, you give it, you basically find your MPQ files. It will extract the actual iScripts from those files. And then you can tell it, you can specifically select animations, units, doodads, and such that you want to extract their behavior. You can also select all of them and extract it all to a same file. I've done that for all three of the MPQ files. I don't think the only two of them were meaningful. Well, I think there were two duplicate files, I think. But there was there's also I don't know if it's the Brood War file or not that has some additional iScript probably, but there was like spells and stuff like that that didn't show up in one.
All of this is extracted from Brood War itself and not for Open Brood War, right? Okay, thank you. Yeah, since in previous casts you mentioned that you have been playing a lot also with Open BW, I was not sure, but yeah, thank you. So it probably used the MQ files that you have just described. Yeah, got it.
Yeah, Open awesome. BW also works with the MPQs, if I recall. Yeah, but for my simulator, I actually used a similar method as the iScript. I didn't have access to their code, but I extracted all of the files that I needed simply for the simulator and stored those in binary files rather than leaving those in the MPQ files because it was considerably faster and smaller to load because you can cut it down from... I've forgotten it, but I was down to like 200 kilobytes of data, I think.
Do you make a simulator from scratch, or are you using some other project?
So I took OpenBW as my source, and then I trimmed out everything that wasn't strictly related to gameplay. So there's a lot of networking and replays and API. There's API handles for OpenBW. Basically stripped all that out, and then I went even a step further, and but as a consequence of ditching the graphics files and sound files, I also had to comment out the code for those so that it wasn't giving me all sorts of errors saying you don't have the resources needed for this code. So I pulled all that out, and it's left with a very small number of files. I think it's 7-8 files left. Maybe less.
Since you are simplifying your simulator, what area are you focused on? What is the main focus on your team now that you are stripping it and making like more of your...
So the main goal was to provide accurate simulation with as little as being bogged down by as little of the excess rest of the program as possible. I don't want to simulate all of StarCraft. I just want the core game mechanics. So that means avoiding, I don't need to display images to the screen, so I don't even need to waste time considering the images. I don't need to load the images into memory. They don't need to be occupying computer resources in the slightest bit. And the same for music. So it's a pretty significant drop in size, I think, because I forget what the exact size. It's a few hundred megabytes for all of StarCraft together, but you're down to like a thousandth of that if you strip out all the resources that you don't need. And some of that actually had to be custom packed where I would strip away specific data from the image, because there was actually some image data that was used for unit positions. And so I actually went in and stripped that data from the image data into a separate file, just so that I could have accurate, I mean, I just want as accurate as possible on the mechanics side. But that led me to the next, one of the biggest problems I've faced at the moment is the, how to deal with the randomness of the game. Because when you deal with create a simulation, you don't want to have a disproportionate result due to a random impact. Like, say, the biggest one, for instance, is when you are using ranged units. Say if you have a battle of dragoons and they're firing and they have a miss chance, every unit has a 1 in 256 chance of missing if they're ranged. But that impact is hugely disproportionate if you only have 10 units on each side fighting, because rather than a 256, 1 in 256 percent impact, that impact might be somewhere in the range of 10% or more. So you're giving this massive impact to something that's almost never happens. So I would add a case, special case, and say that misses like that can't happen. And so it's actually a deviation from the normal mechanics, but it creates a more reliable simulation in that result. I also added best chance outcomes and worst chance outcomes, because you may want to know, if I'm lucky in this battle and say I get 50% more hits than average, then how is the battle going to turn out? Which is especially useful if, say, you're attacking up ground, up from low ground to high ground. You might want to know what's the optimal result, or what's a good optimal result versus what's a bad optimal result. It's not going to give you a strict reliable average, but I added in world lines so you can do multiple simulations simultaneously. So you could say, I'm going to pick four world lines and do two really good results and two really bad results, and then average that and see roughly how did things turn out.
Do you run then an instance of your simulator in your bot, or how those things interact?
Currently, the simulation is a mostly self-contained object that you would just basically, you would probably create a singleton in your bot to hold the simulators. I mean, you wouldn't have to necessarily use a singleton, but you'd want a single instance that was always present to hold the simulation itself, so you can, because it has to load a fair amount of game data even still, especially the simulations are still fairly bulky, because there's a lot of game data and setup involved. That it happens pretty quick, but it's best to avoid doing that every frame or something. It's best to just do a create the base data object once and then manipulate that object as you need it. So you could add a new simulation and a new game to your simulation, basically, and have it run that. Or you could even pause and do a long simulation over many frames. So you could, or do like a variety of things. So you could do something like, I'm going to simulate 10 world lines for 1,000 frames, but I only want to run it for maybe 200 frames of each simulation for a one tick in game. That way your bot doesn't spend all its time accidentally trying to simulate the potential outcomes and time out in the real game.
Your knowledge is truly amazing. How deep did you go to Brood War internal workings? I'm still thinking about because I mean floating units, and my question is, do you know what causes the guardian floating towards its target behavior? because it is infuriating because guardians outrange missile turrets, yet they constantly wandered into range.
So I actually covered it. I didn't mention guardians specifically, but yeah, so since they're flying units, they cannot hard stop. They can't just hit a point and have zero speed. So even if you tell them to attack, what that essentially means, it tells them before that is it sets a drift state. So they're not aiming for any particular destination. Rather, their destination is a waypoint set basically in front of them. Basically states, oh, I've got residual speed and I'm moving forward. And that's all it basically says.
But it can be explicitly stopped, I presume.
But if you waited long enough, it would eventually decelerate to a stop. Though what Arakhammer found was it was far more reliable to micro guardians like Mutas and have them simply constantly at speed, turning in place and firing every chance they had, because otherwise there was no good way of getting them to dump the speed and just stay in place. And it wasn't necessarily advantageous to do so either, because they took so long to get back up to speed that they were sitting ducks if someone countered them with something like with Goliaths or Wraiths or something like that. It was better to just be able to move them quickly out.
Yeah, so there are ways to circumvent that problem. I wonder what type of units Scarabs are.
Scarabs, I thought, are pretty much normal units. I mean, they've got all of the same properties. It's just the one property that they have that other units don't have is they're not selectable, as far as I know, and you can't really issue them any orders directly. So other than that, they're basically just a unit that if you were to set a Zergling on an attack, or in this case maybe an infested Terran on attack, and then be bugged out and not be able to tell it to stop, that's basically what a Scarab does. Other than that, though, it's a lot of its wonky behavior comes down to the fact that it doesn't pathfind like other units in the same way. It has a two-tier pathfinding system. One is a quick and dirty one, and one is a more detailed pathfinding. So,
it would be great to be able to direct the Scarab a little bit better.
Now that you mentioned pathfinding, I have a question about the rain and the location, and probably you are the best one to query this from your extensive knowledge. How the game engine handles units in the same position, since we have like floating units and earth units, for example, of course, the map is like a grid of the sides of the map, but how the engine internally handles like units at the same position at the same time, that's kind of my question. Since, for example, I can suppose that are two layers of units, as we are talking about, like flying units and air units. So I can suppose that the engine handle like this at least separately, or have like notion of these two layers, but how all get like mixed up like internally when they collide or not, because we can have like the bug of the mutas from the floating side, and on the earth side you can like put like the lurkers and that sort of thing. So how can you share about that?
Well, I'll try to add what I can. The pathfinding is I mean, as I repeated over and over again, the forums is the most complex code. The vast majority of the code is actually dedicated to pathfinding, and it's got many states, and it will alternate between states, sometimes multiple times in a single frame. So you can have an error state, a start state, follow state, a illegal check state, and it will cycle through all these until it decides that it's come up with a solution, and then it says, I'm done for this frame, which it may not come with a... The solution might be to do nothing, basically. So in many cases, like say when you have overlapping units, they're actually, as far as I know, all stored in a list of units. There's one that's listed by X coordinate and sorted by Y, and then there's one that's listed by Y coordinate and sorted by X coordinate. But I think one of them is used more than the other.
The engine literally lets you have units with the same like X and Y. That's what you're describing.
Yes, they're not exclusionary. They're they can quite easily overlap. In fact, there's no rule against them overlapping. As far as I know, there may be placement checks, like say in the GUI, which says you could not place two units on top of each other. Like for instance, you can't build a building on top of a building, but there's no rule in the engine which says that you can't have two objects occupying the space once they already do. The space itself, the grid doesn't exist. It's basically a bunch of potential locations, and a unit itself says, I happen to be at that location, rather than the grid saying, this is where a unit is. There just happens to be a list, because you can normally a search for collisions is a more of a big O notation of X, it's like squared. Notation, because you have two separate loops, you have to go one for each axis to check for collisions. Whereas if you can sort them ahead of time, you can turn that into effectively a linear search, which is why those two lists exist. And every time a unit moves, it extracts itself from the list and then inserts itself back into the list at the new location.
I see. So the grid and the map by itself is independent of the state of the game, or is not bound by that at all. So
it depicts pretty accurately on the screen. Let's see. I would say a lot of the collision behavior is just, it's the units just say, is anybody in the same area? There are a lot of methods to deal with overlap, and it says, oh, I'm overlapping with another unit. How do I resolve this? If it's two air units, they say, well, we'll drift slowly apart. And it's kind of a passive part of the pathfinding, and it just says we slowly, which is like the muta flock, if you let them sit, they'll slowly reach a point where they're no longer compacted all together. Whereas if you have zerglings on top of each other, or say drones, which is more likely, if you have to say send two drones to mine the same mineral patch and then you tell them to stop, they'll suddenly realize that they're on top of each other and they shouldn't be. And they'll freak out and try picking weird directions, which is how you do mineral hopping and stuff like that. You could basically, you would put a unit in a place next to the mineral and then have a worker walk on top of it. Because when the worker is approaching the mineral, it has no collision. It doesn't take into consideration collision with any other unit. It basically says, I don't care, it doesn't matter. But everybody else still cares. And so they'll still respond as though they care. So they'll try and wander around randomly. But I actually wrote a post recently on how they try to resolve overlap or blocking, and it takes a few different approaches. The first way is it will try and pick a random corner, as far as I can tell, and it'll say this is a good corner to walk to get around this unit. If that's not possible, say because it's overlapped already and there's not really a corner you could walk to escape the overlap, it'll instead say, well, we'll try a shotgun approach, and we'll just cast some points and a few points in front of me and say, is any of these not blocked? And it'll say, it'll check each one and say, can I get to that point without being blocked? If the other unit is moving, it'll pretty much give up and say, that approach didn't work. It will try picking a random direction, that it will just, it might go in any direction from there. It's a bit like a unit, SCV on when it's building, it just moves randomly. I think it's a 64 by 64 box. It'll just pick a random target, which is why, oftentimes when you have the overlapping units, it'll just sort of wander. You have to repeatedly click in the same direction, because every time between those clicks, it's being reissued a random move target, basically. And then the final backup plan, I think, is that it will do it to another shotgun approach forward towards its goal. I think it's a more narrow shotgun in the last one, but it'll basically say, I didn't choose any other method, so I'm just going to move in the general direction of my target position, or where my goal position is. And that's how you can direct a unit that's overlapping with another unit, even though it's trying to do random wonky stuff at the same time. Is that randomly, I think there's it's a 3 out of 4 chance that you will be able to direct it, and then 1 out of 4 chance that it will randomly move in another direction.
Yes, the thing that you just described is exactly why in the human meta we spam click the move command to avoid all the misbehavior that the units like the Dragoon or other units might have. Like, for example, in drums or in little choke points. The way that you avoid these issues the humans do is like spamming with certain degree the move command to avoid them to get onto that state that get all this random behavior.
Yeah, and the code basically backs it up and says this is definitely the best way of resolving collisions, assuming that you know that going forward is definitely the solution, or going in the direction you want, you're spamming is definitely the solution. So you're taking executive action and saying, this is a good direction. Things just aren't working at the moment. Code is blindly saying that I don't know what's going wrong. It just wasn't working. So I'm going to try something else instead.
Thank you so much for all the information.
So you mentioned you wrote an article about that or a post. Where is that? Or just on Discord?
Yeah, just Discord. It's usually technical Blappy or BWAPI is where I generally will make these long posts because people generally ask questions about how things work there. I've done a few elsewhere, I think, in general chat. But yeah, it's all in this. The SSCAT Discord.
And might I ask, what do you do? What's your day job? What do you do? Because you seem like a really experienced someone.
That's going to be anticlimactic. I work as a deli in real life. I serve mostly cold cut meat. Do a little bit of frying chicken now and then.
What? How? Why? that's really surprising. I thought you were working a developer job.
Nah, mostly I do programming for fun. I mean, I should be doing it as a profession, but I was a little burnt out. Just doing a degree was enough to really burn me out. I think I enjoy doing it more for a passion than I do for work and for meeting expectations of others, I think.
I can completely understand that.
I agree with you.
Truly, truly dumbfounded by this, but hey, if you're you should do what makes you happy. It is quite an exhaustive summary, and thank you very much for that.
Sure.
So the next big question is, are you a part of any AI communities other than the obvious Brood War One? I myself sometimes read about StarCraft 2, which is an obvious connection, but I don't really have time to actively participate in anything else.
I don't personally follow the StarCraft 2 AI community, but I am part of the Siege Engineers AI community for Age of Empires 2, and I'm also a moderator in Discord.
Is there any overlap or any significant overlap with the Brood War community?
Yeah, it's kind of similar, but the API isn't public yet, so there isn't that many bot makers just yet, but it should be probably very much a twin to the BW API community soon.
Interesting, maybe we should have a discussion about that in detail, but probably not in this episode.
Well, I work with the Space Beam project, which is a community project, a community open source project. It's a distributed community around the world, but it's his main base, you could say, is Costa Rica, where we have like more of our people. And we are not just developers. We have like people doing major in philosophy here in Costa Rica and WCG players from here that help with replays and his knowledge of the game and different enthusiasts from the world. We are like 18 members now and growing, and what we focus is on work on distributed systems, and for that we use like Erlang and the Beam virtual machine. In the HPC space, we choose the Singularity project, AI, of course, the StarCraft. We for our things, we focus on three main languages, which are Python, Lua, and Erlang. And we focus around, like, doing work around those communities. Yeah, one of the main points is could be like the work on the Lua, which is a version of Lua, but for the Beam, like for Erlang. We help with the documentation of our that language, and also Robert Bearding, one of the creators for Erlang, build a simulator on Lua that we use or that we re-engineer for the project.
Not really any other involvement. Most of the time I tend to just lurk in various forums. I used to hang out, there was some AGI forums that I used to read regularly, but I think those ground to a halt, lack of interest. After that I eventually found the AGI Reddit and Artificial Reddit, which is where I found the SSCIT group, and ever since I've been following StarCraft. Don't really pay much attention to open AI or any of that. Mostly just stick around here.
Glad you found us.
Well, let's see. I could elaborate. I know you had to ask some more questions about movement and units changing size, and I figure I could address changing in size, unless you had more updates to your questions.
I think we cleared that up last time, didn't we? I think we talked about it. I think we talked about that.
Oh, you asked a question of, you seemed surprised that units didn't change size, like Dragoons and such. It's basically the only time units actually change size is pretty much Zerg eggs morphing, I think. There's a lot of graphics that look like they might change size, like, say, when the add-ons for Terrans do animations when they're detaching and attaching, but pretty much all of those stay the same size.
What about Dragoons when they walk?
Yep, there's no change in size.
What? Yeah. Okay, sure.
No, there really isn't. There's the units only change size when they're pretty much a Zerg morphing into units. So like when you have a larva changes into an egg changes into an Ultralisk. That's a size change. It's not really a incremental size change. It's basically suddenly a unit became another unit, basically. So its unit type was overridden with a new unit, and suddenly it pops into existence as the, or I guess it doesn't really pop into existence, but it switches. Basically, it says, I was an egg, I cleared out all of my egg stats, and then I put in Ultralisk stats. And then I play a short animation, and suddenly there's an Ultralisk.
I left my Agnes in the past. That's not me anymore. That person doesn't exist.
Yeah, pretty much.
Thank you. Have a Zerg bot, and hence you have a Terran bot. But if you may choose to work on a second race, to have to enable like a 2v2, what race do you consider, and what do you think on that format? Or other formats instead of 1v1 for competition of AIs?
Well, the main thing, like, I like making silly bots. Like, my bot is silly. I do mass nukes and play, like, sound effects. So if I was to do anything, I would make a Protoss bot, mind control enemy Terrans, and do the same thing.
Awesome.
If I was going to do it, I would add Terran just so I could get medics to boost my Zerg army.
Yeah, and also infested Terrans.
You can infest an ally's command center. I don't see why not.
Well, I think you'd have to find a way of making infested Terran more viable. I think the best strategy for using the most movement is pretty much to bomb them on enemy harvesting lines. Because if you get a nice infested Terran right in the middle, it can wipe out like 2/3 of a harvesting group. But that's hard to compete with the storm drops.
Imagine drop them on Overlord.
Yeah, but they do damage buildings nicely. So they are basically river scarabs on crack.
Yeah, they certainly pack a punch if you get them right up close to something.
With that, our cast today has come to an end. Thank you very much for being here. It has been a very informative cast, and I hope to see you next time as well. Thank you and goodbye.